through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Oh, welcome back from a fantastic Mariners weekend. I know that they dropped that finale, but they still got a nice series win against the Angels heading into the All-Star break. And Jake, I'm feeling good about where this team is right now. We'll look ahead in just a second, but let's take a second to look back at that series. I was at the game both Friday and Saturday for the two wins, and they were electric for different reasons. And I am proud to report I did not get a sunburn.
Wow.
Nor get sick.
I was worried about that.
Biggest takeaway from the weekend.
Woo! Is all of us got a win. So
wipe the forehead.
I know. Can we just start quickly with a moment that was my first time. I'm not kidding. My first time ever seeing a Grand Slam in person. I don't know how I've managed to avoid it before. I have never been at a game where there was a Grand Slam.
Well, they don't happen every day, right? It doesn't happen very often. So, I mean, for you to be able to be there for that Mitch Haniger Grand Salami, I'm so jealous.
Mitch Haniger trying to give the Mariners a lead here in the bottom of the eighth inning. Wise back to the Angels dugout. Bases loaded, two down. Here's the stretch and the 2-0 pitch. Swing and a drive. Deep to left center field. Going and going. Grandma, get out the rye bread and mustard. It is Grand Salami time. Mitch Haniger with a grand slam here in the bottom of the eighth inning. And the Mariners have the lead. 7-3, his 20th home run of the season. And Haniger clears the bases.
Maybe it was Rally Kid. I don't know what it was, Jake, but the crowd that night was electric. I got it on video and posted it to Instagram. From the shot that we were at, people around us were freaking out. I mean, it was, I will say, the two crowds I was in for Friday night when everyone was screaming and freaking out for that Grand Slam. And it was a comeback win, too, which was huge. And then on Saturday, one of the biggest crowds I think I've been to there in a while. 27,000-plus people at T-Mobile Park. It was a fantastic weekend.
It sounds like it. And watching it on TV, it was incredible to watch those two games for two entirely different reasons. I mean, you talk about Friday night. You talk about the comeback, and obviously Marco Gonzalez has a very poor start to the game, settles down, and then gives you a chance to be able to make that comeback. But you're setting up that Mitch Haniger grand slam, I mean, comes from one of the best at-bats that I had seen in quite some time, which was J.P. Crawford, mm-hmm. his nine-pitch at-bat, where he was just battling, absolutely battling from being in a horrible, you know, count 0-2 and then coming back and fighting off and being able to get that walk. I mean, it was a pivotal moment in that, and that's where you just felt like, okay, something great and big is about to happen with Mitch Haniger.
This is how I knew that JP's at-bat was great, is I was there with three friends, and one of them is not a big baseball fan at all, and God love her, but she was like, how many tries does he get?
Oh, gosh.
She was very confused about the concept of, yeah, I was like, forever. That's how many tries he gets. He's J.P. Crawford. The J.P. chant was going. I was happy to be a part of it. It wasn't as successful that time. And as Curtis has cautioned, you don't want to overuse it. You don't want to overuse the J.P. chant. Mm-mm. But it was fun to hear it in person because I hadn't heard it last time. And you were there in that game.
I was there for that moment. And also that you talk about not using it too much. But every time J.P. comes up to bat, because my boys were there for that, they remember it, seared into their brain. And so every time J.P. Crawford comes up to bat, Jackson, and even my one-year-old about to turn two, Bodie, he chants J.P. So it's really fun. It's awesome to see these Mariners, you know, play baseball in a way that's so exciting and the fans be behind it. And then you go to Saturday, and it was an absolute dominating performance from Chris Flexen. Let's hear it in cut number two here.
Here comes his 2-2. Swing and a miss. He got him a vicious curveball that Ward swings through. Down he goes, and Chris Flexen has done it again. He has blanked the Angels through seven innings, on just three hits allowed. Another brilliant night for the Mariners starter, Chris Flexen.
I mean, seven dominant innings to the point where I thought maybe Service would let him go into the eighth. I thought there was a possibility of that just because he was mowing guys down and you're going to have the bullpen day the next day.
But when you got Drew Steckenrider and Pauly Sewald shutting it down, you don't even need a starting pitcher.
No, you don't. You feel good about it. And those two guys after, Steckenrider and Paul Sewald, they finished the deal off, and it was about as dominating of a pitching performance that you could have across the board on Saturday. That was a lot of fun to watch as well.
The final shout out and tip of the cap goes to Rally Kid. Rally Kid, I almost said Rally Cat. Rally Kid was phenomenal, and he was on with Paul this morning.
He was.
I loved Rally Kid.
Well, the thing is that was frustrating, I don't know about you, Curtis, because you weren't at the game either, was the fact of everybody was talking about Rally Kid.
Okay.
I'm like, Who is Rally Kid, and what is going on?
So,
I love what I'm seeing. Right. I love that Scott Service is giving him the lineup card, and everybody's going nuts for this kid. But what is going on?
If you were not at the game, you know how they have the camera that goes around T-Mobile
FOMO.
And it shows people dancing and doing everything. So they go to this one kid, this little kid, and he's like, he is dancing just full go, 100% effort, and people are cheering. They're freaking out. It goes to someone else, like some adult, I don't even remember, who wasn't as good a dancer, wasn't trying as hard because he's got taxes and bills, and he's seen the darkness of the world. It goes back to this kid. The crowd erupts again. And then it just keeps throughout that entire inning. I think that it was when the Mariners were I feel like it was leading up to Mitch's grand slam. Like, it was that same inning, I think. And it keeps, like, every 2 minutes it would flash to Rally Kid again. And finally it goes to him. You can tell he's getting tired. Someone behind me was like, leave him alone. He's exhausted. Give him a rest. At the end of the game, Scott Service ended up getting him and his family tickets, real nice tickets to come to the game Saturday. It was an awesome story.
That is awesome.
The Mariners are in a fascinating spot, just to look ahead. They're in the first team out of the wild card standings, 3.5 wild card games back from Oakland. And they have an opportunity, you guys, to gain ground in nearly every series in the second half of July through August. So I only looked through August for the purposes of this conversation. They've got two series against the Astros, A's, and Rangers, plus a series against the Rays, who are 4.5 wild card games back, the Yankees also 4.5 back, and the Blue Jays 4.5 back in the wild card race. You have a chance to make up really nice ground. Now, the problem isn't just that a lot of these teams are leading in pretty significant areas. Houston is just phenomenal offensively, leading in almost every category except for home runs. The Angels, third in home runs in the last 30 days. But then you have to look at where the Mariners have been. They've improved in the last 30 days. Don't get me wrong. They're tied for seventh in home runs with the Rangers, 39. But they are still trailing on average, not just the rest of the league, but the rest of the opponents they're going to face in OPS, in total hits. They're behind all but the Yankees and Rays. So they've got an uphill battle still, despite having a great opportunity.
They do, and it's right in front of them. And I have to be honest, like, I am torn. And I'm not torn in a pessimistic way, but there is a side of me, and it's really 90%, to be honest, that I'm like, okay, I'm all in on this team. I love what I'm seeing. I really feel something turning. It's not something that I can pinpoint in terms of stats, even though you look at and you isolate June and what June has been and into early July has been for these Mariners. It's been unbelievable what this past month has been. They've really turned it around offensively in a lot of statistical categories. But there's another side of it where these guys believe in each other. Mm-hmm. These guys, with their backs against the wall, they still feel like they have a chance in these games, despite, you know, it's almost like they just don't know what's good for them, what is actually expected of them. Like, hey, baseball, when you're down this much at this point in time and the way the game has gone, you're just supposed to fold it in. And with these guys, they continue to keep fighting. They continue to keep scratching and clawing. And maybe that's due to their youth and them not knowing any better. But they have really established a culture there with the Mariners that I love and I think is legit. And so from that aspect, I do think that they have a chance to really push into this wild card contention here, even towards the end of the year. There is also 20 years of history that tell us otherwise, right? And I never want to dive back into that because I always get upset and frustrated with people that say, well, we've seen this before and all that. Every year's different. But at the same time, is this year going to be that year where they're able to curb that trend, where they're able to overcome the odds and become a team that really, truly is in it with some of these great teams that you see, teams that have better rosters, that are more loaded, like the Yankees, the Blue Jays, and the Rays. You put those teams together, and how do the Mariners stack up? Can they really compete with these teams heading into the second half of the season? I think that's a big, big question, and the first couple weeks I think are going to be really pivotal for this team as they head into the trade deadline.
And they have a couple opportunities, speaking of the trade deadline, to obviously they're going to be looking to get better and probably make some trades, presumably to acquire talent. They aren't going to go all in as traditional buyers here, but they do have an opportunity to get better, whether it's bringing in another arm, considering some of the disappointing performances they've had from their starting rotation and injuries with Sheffield, Dunn still on the IL. It remains to be seen whether or not they're going to do that, though. And Jake, Curtis, and myself have outlined kind of three of our biggest concerns heading into just even the second half of July. And then we'll dive into two ways that they can address those and overcome them, or what they can do in light of that, just so that we're not all bad news bears. We've got plenty of reason for excitement about what the Mariners are doing right now, and then some very real concerns that we're going to outline. So that's all coming up later in the show. We have some really fun guests today, too. We're going to get this started with Shannon Dreher joining us at 11:30. She's going to give us a first half recap of the season. We'll take a look ahead to what the Mariners can do in the second half and do a little bit of a grade to figure out what exactly they're at. We're also continuing our preview of the NFC West with NBC Sports Bay Area's Jennifer Lee Chan at 1:30. So you guys don't want to go anywhere. Right now, though, it's time for headlines.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrite.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacy.
Headline number one, Mariners top catching prospect Cal Raleigh making his major league debut on Sunday. He went 0-for-4, though. But what is the real headline?
Fans pleasantly surprised to find out Raleigh's nickname is Big Dumper. But what we want to know now is, who's Little Dumper? That's what I want to know. I was thinking Big Dipper, Little Dipper. Like, who's the Big Dumper is Cal Raleigh, but who's the Little Dumper?
Who's the Little Dumper?
What a nickname to drop out Fantastic. On social media that Jared Kelnick did. What? Ooh, why? I have so many questions about this. Why is Cal Raleigh?
Well, I think we know why. His
really?
Nickname's Big Dumper. Okay. I mean, it's not the right there for the taking.
Yeah.
You know what's funny about Cal Raleigh is I am really excited about him. I think he's got a great chance to be a guy that is the stalwart of the catching position, is the guy that's going to hold it down from here on out. You know, switch hitter, really good leadership, all the things and traits that you are looking and expecting to have in your catcher of the future. It's fun to have him up right now, and I really hope he succeeds in the second half of the season with the Mariners. I felt like I was, in Space Jam. Michael Jordan comes up and gets the cuts and comes back to the bench, and everybody's like, hey, Michael, that's a good cut. That's a good-looking swing, man. You struck out. That's a good-looking strikeout. That's how I was acting with Cal Raleigh. I was just pumped to see
him
up there.
No matter what he does.
Exactly.
You're like, it was great. You look great up there.
It didn't matter. And his first plate appearance, he ended up getting out. But, man, he was battling up there at the plate. I was just stoked to have him up with the Mariners.
You're doing great, sweetie.
You're doing great, sweetie. You're doing great. It was interesting to bring him up. I mean, Curtis, you pointed this out, and we'll ask Shannon about it when she joins us in 15 minutes. But it was interesting to bring him up so soon, right before the All-Star break, instead of just afterward, presumably when you're going to bring up Kelnick. But we'll see what went into that.
Yeah, when you want your prospects to get into the full swing of a season, you don't really want to give them 4 days off right after making such a big debut. But it would appear as though Cal Raleigh won't be the only top prospect on the Mariners roster once the All-Star break is over. You know, some reports flying around there. Ryan Divish, I think, was one of the first to say that Jared Kelnick expected to be up soon after, but let's get to headline number two.
Headline Rewrites.
Well, speaking of Mariners catchers, they go and make high school catcher slash outfielder Harry Ford their first-round pick of the 2021 Major League Baseball draft last night. What is the real headline?
Harry Ford excited to join the Mariners after a long and illustrious career as Hollywood icon.
It's Harrison Ford.
I know.
Harry Ford.
Well, I wanted to do Robber Baron Harry Ford, but it just didn't have the same... It
didn't quite make the cut.
Panache.
It didn't make the cut to have a high school catcher and Robber Baron.
So are you expecting Harry Ford to come out with one of those whips in Indiana Jones?
I didn't know anyone...
The satchel bag?
Born in after 2000 could be named Harry Ford. It just feels like...
Han Solo.
Yeah.
It's a strong name, though.
It is a strong name, but it's the name that someone who is like an oil tycoon has.
Or you're just a huge, like Curtis said, you're a huge fan of Star Wars. You're a huge fan of Indiana Jones.
True.
I mean, maybe his parents are big fans of Harrison Ford's work. But what I am excited about is you go through and you look at the scouting reports for Harry Ford. And look, this is a kid that we're probably not going to see for many years down the road. At the earliest, probably 2024, and most likely past that point. But this is a kid that, look, it caught my eye that he was a catcher, but he's also listed as a guy that could play second base, outfield. And what stands out to me more than anything else is when you watch this kid hit, my goodness, there is explosion going on at the plate when he goes and makes contact with the ball, and then not to mention the bat flip that went viral. I like this kid.
Now, didn't DePoto kind of hint with us last Friday when we were broadcasting from Edgar's that they were going to just go for best available no matter what, anytime, and may do something a little surprising? It is the first high school player selected by DePoto in the draft.
He did, and he teased. He said, I remember this very vividly because I'm like, all right, shoot, we should make a note of this, is that he said to us that this may be the year that we go with upside more than going with the traditional college pick. He said that specifically on our show, and that's exactly what they did. And so that tells me and gets me even more excited that Harry Ford was somebody that didn't just, oh man, they were reactionary. Somebody else was taken in front of them that they thought was going to fall down. It would have been awesome to have Kumar Rock fall down to 12, by the way.
Oh, he was at 10.
Just ripped out the
was
hole.
Right
when
there.
He was available
Deacon
at 10,
Mets.
I got a text from Brandon Gustafson, we're going to have on at noon. I also got a text from my dad, both like, oh man, we get Kumar Rocker here and a couple picks. And then the dream
Don't
died.
Let yourself believe it. That's when it gets too close. It's like Survivor, Curtis. How often have we talked about this? I would
when
rather
you say
go
you're
out
in, you're
earlier.
In charge of the game or like the game's coming to me, that's when you're getting voted out.
Yeah, it's just the way the world works. And but despite not getting, you know, Kumar Rocker, which would have been amazing, I think they got the guy that they had pinpointed all along in Harry Ford, and that makes me feel very, very excited.
Headline Rewrites.
Been waiting for this one. Our very own Jake Heaps will tackle the American Ninja Warrior course tonight.
It's going down.
8 p.m. on NBC. What is the real headline?
Local star Jake Heaps going to be on American Ninja Warrior tonight.
So nice of
and
you.
And you can't run from this one by entering the transfer portal.
Oh!
Wow! That took a twist I wasn't expecting.
Wow!
Sorry, Jake.
Cut
we had
off
to
at the knees.
Jake, we had to do
I'm
it.
I'm speechless.
We had to do it. Honestly, my biggest regret.
I thought we were friends.
And we are. We love you. My biggest regret is going to be potentially offending anyone in the Heaps family.
I'm telling you, Knives. If they listen to that, Knives are getting whipped out.
Oh, Heaps family crew, rolls deep. I believe it.
They are ride or die.
That's exactly right.
But well played. Well played.
We had to.
Now,
do it.
Now here's the thing. I did not run from this. Never ran from anything in my life. But American Ninja Warrior course, that was no joke. That was so much fun. And I got to tell you guys, it was when you know you're in a place that you're not supposed to be, like, it hits you hard. And when I was in there getting ready and they put you in this waiting room before you go out on the course, like, I already have my self-doubts. Like, what am I doing here, right? Like, I'm trying to do this and have fun with it. And then I'm in the waiting room while everybody else is warming up. They're doing backflips. They're... you know, going up and climbing stuff with just one hand, and here I am just, like, doing my normal stretches and calisthenics, and I'm like...
You're doing, like, the...
arm circles.
Yeah, exactly. Just leaning to one side.
What am I doing here? But in all seriousness, it was so fun. It was an amazing experience. I'll never forget it. And I'm so excited for everybody else to watch it tonight. NBC tonight, American Ninja Warrior. Man, it's going to be fun.
We're rooting for you no matter what. But how mad were you on the 31st of May when the series or the season premiered and you saw that the high schoolers got to do the first couple rounds? Were you like, well, I would have dominated this?
Yes. Not that course, and not saying that I would dominate it, but just as the course changed, they make little tweaks to it as the week goes on. And as I was watching these other episodes and watching the different stages, I'm like, that would have been easier. Not saying that I could have done it, but it's way easier than what I did. And everybody will just watch it. But, like, I was so frustrated.
I feel like it brings out your dad energy to just be the normal dude there. Like, hey, I'm Jake.
That's how I felt. I really did. Everybody, like, had their own shtick, like tutus. And a guy before me, his name's, like, the Stampede or something. And he has, like,
the Stampede?
Yeah. He's gone to the finals, like, four times, and he had, like, a fake like toy horse thing that he rode or what.
Throughout the whole No spoilers.
It was a unique experience.
We are very excited to watch you, all jokes aside, and obviously rooting for you. I can't wait to joke about it tomorrow. All right, let's grade out the Mariners' first half and figure out where this team stands heading into the All-Star break with Shannon Dreher. She joins us next on Jake and Stacey.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
All right, going to take a look back at the first half of the Mariners season with Mariners insider for 710sports.com, Shannon Dreher, brought to you by the Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Shannon, how are you?
I am well. Taking a little bit of a breather right now.
Wonderful. So I was looking ahead at the Mariners' second half only through the part of July and then into August, and they've got a great chance to make ground in the wild card race. Unfortunately, it's against some teams that have a lot of strengths over Seattle. So when you look at just kind of their odds against upcoming series with Houston or Oakland, how do you feel about where they stand in just the AL West?
Well, I think if you look at what's coming up, I believe it's 45 of their remaining 71 games are against the division. So, you know, if we are now talking playoffs, and the original goal, of course, was development, get better, be on the upward trajectory at the end, perhaps flirt with the playoffs. If something happens, it happens. If we are actually talking about playoffs at this point, you're going to have to contend with the division. There are no two ways about it. And the good news in that regard is if you look at the wild card standings today, the Mariners, there is nobody between them and the second wild card spot, which is held by the Oakland Athletics, who so far they are 3-3 against this season. So I like the idea that they are going to have a lot of division, because that's not going to be important just for this year, but for next year as well. I like the idea that this is a team that believes that they're firing on all cylinders, and I'm talking about the players. If you hear the comments from them, particularly over the last couple of weeks, I think this is what they want. They're getting very, very competitive, so I think that this is going to be a great experience for them. You know, Oakland does have 3.5 games up on them. They are certainly more seasoned than this Mariners club is. But you know what? Bring it on. Let's see what happens, because this is who you are going to have to deal with, you know, forever. So why not right now?
And Shannon, I love that. I love what's brewing within this clubhouse right now. It gets me really fired up, and it's a big reason why I am buying into this team right now. And there is that 10% of me that does think, oh man, there's so much that they have overcome. How sustainable is that? But how critical are the next couple weeks after the All-Star break going to be for this team?
Well, again, if you are talking about playoffs, very critical. If you are talking about development, then not as critical, because you've got the remainder of the season, and I think that you've already had some very key questions answered. You've gotten the answer on Logan Gilbert. He's fine. Let him go. Let him be what he is going to be. Continue to develop, and I think he's starting at a much higher point than anybody thought that he would. You've got the answer on J.P. Crawford. He's your shortstop going forward. Check that off the box when you're looking at what you're going to do in in the off season? You've got your answer on Yusei Kikuchi. You know, was he going to be able to step up and be more than a four or five in the rotation? Would he live up to the stuff that he had? Would he be able to put it together and avoid the big inning and get out of trouble? And he's done that. So you can push all that aside. As far as, you know, critical for what's coming up, you hope that you can get Kyle Lewis back on the field. And it sounds like they are going to be able to this year. It doesn't sound like you're going to be able to get Evan White out there. And that's, you know, that's bad. That's in the wrong category altogether. And perhaps you have to look a little bit more at first base. But if you are looking at the postseason, very critical, but you also know that you still will have games, a good number of games remaining among the division. And that's who you're going to have to beat.
And Shannon, I think that's the interesting part about that is you're talking about the difference between playoff contention versus development. And really, this is kind of a win-win situation for the Mariners. If, hey, you're not in the playoff spot, but you do get a lot of answers along the way, it's a win. But if this team is outperforming expectations, continuing to do that, then wow, you're one step ahead of where you thought you were going to be. You're 1 year ahead. And now you get to the trade deadline. How does that affect the way that Jerry DePoto thinks and maneuvers at that deadline?
Well, he spoke with us a couple of days ago, and he said he's not going to do anything to jeopardize the young group that they are growing right now in terms of he's not going to take away from it and trade those young players. And I think the question now is when you have a team that is believing that they are in it right now and they believe that they are in it, then you've got to be careful how you handle things in the messaging. They desperately need starting pitching right now, and Jerry DePoto is well aware of that. So you look for him to add somehow to that. We've talked all season long about, well, are you going to trade Mitch Haniger because he's only got 2 years of club control or 1 year of club control left after this year? Do you move Kyle Seager if you can move Kyle Seager? Do you move Kendall Graveman? I think that you've got to take a closer look at all of that. And I'm not saying that you can't move any of the above, but if you do, you better have something coming back that is going to help now, because I think at this point, with what they're doing right now, if you take something away that is going to hurt them and what they are doing on the field, they're going to feel that. That's going to be a bad feeling, and you don't want that going through the clubhouse. I think you might also be getting to the point where it could do a lot of good if you brought something in to help that group and try and make that push. So I think things kind of changed for Jerry DePoto from a month ago, where it was at the worst, let's just leave it status quo right now, to now it's like, okay, I think we need to help this group because of the messaging that it sends.
I guess that's what I'm a little worried about, Shannon, is that adding to a much needed position group, which would be your starting rotation, if you do use Haniger, for instance, as a trade piece, well, he's leading your team in home runs, RBI, OPS. I mean, he's second in average and in hits. It's a huge hit to your offense as a whole. And Crawford's been fantastic in the last 30 days. Seager's obviously in here. France is in here in top three in all these categories. But I do worry if you kind of give up too much offense should you make that move to acquire a better arm.
I don't know that you have to give up offense to do that at the big league level. I think that, you know, a lot of times that you do see if there's a team that has got that player right now and they're giving them up, they're probably pretty far out of it, and they probably will take something that is further along or further away from the big league. So, and to get that piece, I don't think you have to give up those players. I think you give up a Haniger more if you are looking at building blocks, things that are close to the big leagues, or even better yet, something that is similar to what you already have at the big leagues. I don't think that you need to essentially go out there and get a starter that you're going to have for the next 6 years that's ready to go right now. You need somebody to help get through this year. And we've talked about this a little bit before. You're not going to see George Kirby April 1st next year. You're not going to see Emerson Hancock April 1st next year. They're going to need help in that rotation next year as well. And we don't have the answers on Justice Sheffield and Justin Dunn yet. So I think that that is an area that you can feel confident about going in and saying, yeah, we're going to pull in some guys that we can use right now. And it might be now, it might be in the off season, but I think that, you know, it's very clear that that's what they need. I don't think you necessarily have to detract from the big league club to get that. You might not even have to make a trade. You know, it might be one of the affiliated leagues in baseball where he's able to go out and find somebody like a Wade LeBlanc that can help get them through this year. That's not going to help next year. And then you tackle that in the off season, but one way or another, you know, they can't go with a bullpen day now every fifth day. They're going to the five-man rotation again. They can't go with a bullpen day every fifth day. So somewhere they're going to have to get that player, and I'm not sure that you have to give up too much for it.
Shannon, we have about 30 seconds here. Just want to get your quick thoughts on how exciting it was to see Cal Raleigh called up, and was it a surprise to you to see him called up last game before the All-Star break?
Yeah, it was kind of strange timing, but I think that way he does make his big league debut at home, which I'm sure they wanted to see. He does get a little bit of a break. If they had all of a sudden given him a couple of days off at AAA, they would have started, okay, he's coming up, right? And that would have been a news cycle for like 48 hours. Now he can relax. He's got that experience under his belt, got a few days to think about it. Now they go out on the road, and he will be on his way. We'll see that first big league hit. And I think it was a nice bonus that it was at home, and a great crowd got to see that yesterday.
She's Mariners insider for 710 ESPN Seattle, Shannon Dreher. Read her work at 710sports.com. Follow her at Shannon Dreher on Twitter. Thanks, Shannon. Have a good one.
You too, guys.
All right. Now, we talked about looking over the Mariners' three biggest concerns, one from each of us. So we'll start with mine. What if the Mariners don't let Jerry Dipoto make significant moves at the trade deadline without an extension? We'll dive into that next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
All right, we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners are going to return to action with the series against the Angels Friday, so you can hear that on 710 ESPN Seattle. Until then, the All-Star game's tomorrow, and you are on an All-Star break. That's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. This hour of Jake and Stacey brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. We were talking about the really exciting opportunity and interesting opportunity the Mariners have in the second half of the year. As Shannon pointed out, they have like something like 45-odd games against division opponents. They have many, many games against teams that are in the wild card race along with them right now behind them, because the Mariners are the first team outside of the wild card, but they're going to need to obviously outperform those teams. I don't know that they have the weapons right now to do that. They've got a starting rotation that, when it hasn't been kind of disappointing, in the case for Justice Sheffield, for instance, they've also been injured. So it's been one of the two. I mean, Kikuchi's been phenomenal. He's an all-star for you this year. Flexen's been such a find. Outside of those two, though,
Logan Gilbert. His development. But you're right. I mean, 40% of the starting rotation stays. I'm with you. It's less than desired right now, less to be desired right now in terms of this group and how they're performing. And you feel like two of those games with that starting rotation right now, you feel like you're up against it.
And I feel like acquiring an arm, a starting pitcher for that rotation to kind of get you through the second half, but also certainly help you build toward contending in 22 and 23, I would count that as a significant move. Anyone that will help you this year as a starter, I'm counting as a significant move. So my first kind of concern for the Mariners is that the Mariners won't let Jerry Dipoto make significant moves at the trade deadline without an extension. And this is kind of your shot. You've got 2 weeks to make these kinds of calls and to acquire that kind of talent before the trade deadline on the 31st. And I don't know when this extension is coming, but I would hope that they get that figured out, or that they allow him to make whatever moves he feels are necessary even without an extension. And I don't know that they will. I'm not hearing anything that says they won't. Yeah. It's just a fear that I have.
Well, I think it's a logical fear. I mean, how do you let this guy, how do you let Jerry Dipoto make all these deals, wheeling and dealing at the trade deadline?
Right.
If he doesn't have an extension, if he's not somebody that, as an organization, you feel like he is the architect of your future, right? And I just don't understand how you can be in this position heading into the trade deadline. And quite frankly, I'm on extend Jerry Dipoto and Scott Service. What more do you want them to show you at this current point in time other than, hey, we want to see them get to the postseason this year? I mean, even that was an unrealistic expectation heading into this year. You knew that wasn't going to be the goal for this group. And are you waiting on what Cal Raleigh and Jared Kelnick are going to do in the second half of the season for you to determine if you are indeed, in fact, on the right track and that Jerry is the guy and Scott's the guy. I just think that what Scott Servais has done this year with everything that has gone on with this club is 100% worthy of an extension. Jerry Dipoto, I just don't trust the organization to find somebody middle of the rebuild to replace Jerry and do it better than what he envisions it being right now. And unless you're telling me that Theo Epstein around the corner is like seriously interested in the Mariners, I can't get on board with that necessarily. And I think these are all legitimate concerns because they, you're right, they do need to make additions to this team in order to give them that extra bump, that extra boost heading into this, the second half of the season after the trade deadline when things really start to ratchet up in August and September.
Now, for his part, Jerry Dipoto was asked on 710 ESPN Seattle, hey, is not having an extension going to impact your decision-making?
Not at all. I've said throughout that this is, I am having more fun doing what I'm doing right now than I've ever had in my job because I see the progress we're making every day. The group around us is so energized and I'm not really considering the idea that I won't be back. I guess there's always that possibility, but I've always thought, take all the distractions away, focus on the job that needs to be done and then control what you can control. And that's the way I'm viewing this. And I believe that all of those that are involved are doing the same.
Now, I'm imagining any restriction on what he wants to do would come from the Mariners ownership. It would come from them saying, like, don't make any huge significant moves, right? I don't think that Jerry Dipoto would be making any wild, crazy, reckless moves just because he doesn't have an extension. I am more concerned that he will be restrained from making any significant moves because of that. And honestly, I mean, there was Ryan Divish about a week ago wrote for the Seattle Times about the status of Jerry Dipoto's extension and what that looks like. And he said that there were some, I hope I'm not misquoting him. I think there were some MLB sources saying that the deal floating around may be something like a one-year deal from the Mariners. Basically, that the Mariners may be more interested in offering a shorter term deal to Dipoto so that they can see how that final year works out, which kind of makes me nervous because I'm like, what are they seeing that they're unsure about?
Right.
Is it that they just want to make sure that the homegrown, a.k.a. cheaper talent, works out, that Julio works out, that Jared works out, that
I think
Cal
it
works
is.
Out?
I think it is. But at the same time, if that truly is the case, you need more than just a year. Because are you going to, if you're Jerry Dipoto, are you going to rush Julio Rodriguez up next year because you're up on that timeline? You're up on the deadline of getting Julio up because you have to show ownership that this guy is going to work out? I mean, that's the thing that I just don't like about it. A two-year deal, I think a three-year deal is appropriate for what these guys have done and what they've shown up to this point right now. But, that's an interesting point that you make, Stacey. Because as I look at this heading into it, I don't think they need to make big drastic moves for them to accomplish ultimately what they want, which is to give them an advantage to be better in their lineup and with their pitching staff, to have more stability in those two areas so that they can have a better chance of competing for a wild card spot this year. But if there was an opportunity that presented itself, let's say there was a deal that they could make and pull the trigger on a big-time pitcher to add into the starting rotation or a positional player that you feel like if I get a chance to have him now, we have a better chance of signing him to a bigger deal in the offseason, and Jerry Dipoto's hands are tied in that moment, I'm going to be very frustrated by that. And I think that's a great point that you make because it's not something that I'm expecting them to do.
Right.
So I'm not really worried about it. But if the opportunity presented itself, you do want your GM
you want
to feel like he
free
can
reign to
yeah
make
to be
that
able
call.
To capitalize on it for
exactly.
Sure.
All right, 10 seconds left here. I just want to let you guys know a Mariners roster move. This from about a half hour ago. Yusei Kikuchi. There was a little bit of a scare the other day when he was placed on the IL. It was later clarified that may have been COVID related and just precautionary because he's vaccinated. He has officially been reinstated from the IL, so nothing going on there. All good with Yusei Kikuchi. Meanwhile, Donovan Walton has been optioned to Tacoma. Will Vest DFA'd. So that is the latest from the Mariners. And we also have some Mariners draft picks, 710sports.com's Brandon Gustafson going to join us next to tell us everything we need to know about the newest Seattle Mariners.